antique dresser. Grant Jefferson. Monster-hunting legend. In his own mind, at least. Brave hero, who didn't think twice about leaving me to die. Perhaps the most stuck-up prick I had ever met. And worst of all, Julie's boyfriend. I would have preferred vampires. "Hello, Pitt," Grant greeted me as I stomped down the stairs. "Glad to see you were able to escape those gargoyles." He lied easily enough. I knew that if I had been pasted all over rural Alabama, he wouldn't have shed many tears. I resisted the urge to snap-shoot the scumbag right between the eyes. "I bet you are," I grunted.
"Owen saved my life," Julie told him. "If it hadn't been for him, I'd be dead. He beat one of them to bits. Saved my dad, too."
"Really? Good job, newbie," Grant said. Tripp entered behind them and rolled his eyes when he saw Grant. We had a little help. I thought of the farmer with the NRA hat and elephant rifle. Some folks aren't too chicken shit to risk their lives for somebody else.
"Owen," Julie snapped. "We don't have time for that right now."
Grant surprised me then. I had not known the man had any humility in him at all. "No, that's okay. I'll admit I made a tactical error. I didn't think I could save you, so I retreated to a more advantageous position. It seemed like the prudent thing to do at the time." He draped one arm casually over Julie's shoulders. I figured that was probably as close to an apology as he had ever mustered. I bit my tongue to keep from saying anything further. Holly entered from the back, and Gretchen glided silently in from the kitchen. Julie shrugged out from under Grant's arm and sat down. She was back to business.
"So what's going on back at the compound?" Julie demanded. "And more important, how's Dr. Nelson?"
Grant adjusted his silk tie as he spoke. He did not like being ordered around, but he knew his place. "The doctor's going to be okay. He suffered a coronary, but he's stable." I breathed a sigh of relief. "As for the compound, Myers and the Monster Control Bureau agents are still there. They want your father, badly. APBs have been issued for him, you, and Pitt. They're making life difficult. All of our personnel have been grounded until Ray Shackelford is found."
"That sucks," Julie said.
"There is good news, though. There have been undead attacks all over Georgia, Alabama, and eastern Mississippi. Looks like the Seven split up to cause trouble. Over the last 2 days, newly created vampires, whites, and zombies have wreaked havoc."
"That's good news?"
Tripp said incredulously. "Sure is. The feds are jumping, trying to contain the outbreaks, and still watch the spots they think are places of power. Local law enforcement doesn't have any idea what's going on because the feds are keeping them in the dark. Every National Guardsman and reservist in the South has been called up on emergency duty. Local officials are panicking. The news is reporting it all as terrorist attacks, and Homeland Security has moved most of the Southeast to condition red."
"I'm still not grasping the good part of that," Tripp replied.
Grant sighed in exasperation, as if baffled by the ignorance of newbies.
"Harbingers put the word out to all the local officials who are on our side. The governor's office, state legislatures, even Congress and the Senate. Pretty much every pro-hunting politician.
I imagine that some of our bounty from the Antoine Henri job had been used to grease a few palms as well.
They're putting pressure on Myers to let us go so we can do our jobs. We have contracts with these states that we can't currently fulfill because of the feds. Lots of people are getting ticked off, and the worse the crisis gets, the more their complaints get heard by Myers' bosses in Washington. The last thing that they want is for it to get so bad that the truth can't be contained from the general populace."
"So you think they're going to let us go?" asked Holly. "The feds are just going to back off?"
"I think so,"
Grant said smugly, which I took to mean that Harbinger thought so, and Grant liked to be right.
If there are more attacks tonight, like there were last night, then they aren't going to have much choice.
I'm surprised they're doing this. It isn't like vampires to provoke confrontation with humans. They're powerful, but there are lots more of us than there are of them. Direct confrontation with the living usually gets them staked and chopped in short order.
Why all of these attacks?
Julie mused.
Because in 3 days it isn't going to matter, I told them. The Seven are only here to help the Cursed One. They know that we're onto them. They have nothing to lose. They attack. They create more undead. They cause confusion and spread human forces thin. That's what they want.
3 days? Grant asked in confusion.
That's when my dad says that they will use their artifact, Julie said. Come on, what else?
He continued. Harbinger doesn't want to turn your dad over. He thinks the feds have a leak. How else could the CO have known about Ray? The only people who know about him are us and them.
Grant seemed saddened that this news did not shock us.
I told you so,
Tripp said. I golf-clapped for him. He flipped me the bird. All in good fun, of course. Our visitor ignored our antics.
We learned some more things while you've been away. He nodded in my general direction, not quite willing to actually mention any contributions I have made, but needing to emphasize the source of their intel. We found the name Berica. We think we know who he is, or maybe I should say was.
The old man? I was shocked. He pulled a piece of paper out of his suit pocket. He carefully unfolded it and read.
Mordecai Berica, born in Lodz, Poland, in 1874. Freelance monster hunter. Did rather well for someone who worked solo, mostly in Eastern Europe. Last whereabouts were when he was arrested by Nazis in 1941. He was sent to a concentration camp, escaped, was recaptured, sent to another camp in 1943, and never heard from again.
Grant handed the paper over to me.
There was a single, grainy, black-and-white photograph photocopied under the information.
It was him, all right. Slightly younger, not quite as worn down by age and time, but still with the same hard eyes behind small glasses. I was sure of it. In the picture he was standing, with a rifle in hand, in front of the corpse of some sort of massive, scaled monster. It was a trophy shot, the kind that you took as proof to collect on a bounty.
"Is that the man, Owen?"
Julie asked, standing up and crowding next to me to see the picture. Tripp and Holly followed closely, also curious to see. Gretchen was inscrutable under her burqa and shades. She wandered off toward the kitchen, probably bored and looking for something to eat.
"This is him. I'm sure of it. How did you find him?"
"His journal is in the archives. It was found on a contract mission to Prague back in the 80s. We collect information from old hunters every chance we get. We aren't any smarter than the old-timers. We've just learned from their experience," Julie explained. "Lee found it. He was cross-referencing everything in the archives, and the name stuck out. He remembered Pitt saying that name from his dreams."
"Remind me to give Albert a fat bonus when we get back," Julie said. "What's in the journal?"
"Years and years of hunting. But if you skip to the end, he was after the CO. It was kind of like a quest for him. Killing that particular monster was his holy grail," Grant told us. I found that a slightly ironic turn of phrase to use about a Jew.
Berica studied him for years. He was sure that the creature's physical body was someplace in Europe. His search led him to believe that the Nazis were in league with Lord Machado.
"In league for what?" Holly asked.
"Complete and total control over time."
"Sounds familiar," I said.
"It's worse. Berica studied this for years. He was convinced that the CO had the ability and the insanity to do it. The only thing holding him back was that he needed a certain artifact that was protected by some sort of ancient guardian. Once it was taken from the Guardian, it had to be taken to a certain place at a certain time and activated with a special blood sacrifice. The journal went into a lot of details about what he thought would happen if the CO was successful.
How bad? All of us asked in unison.
I don't know. Haven't read it yet. But Harbinger absolutely freaked out. Said that we should shoot your dad rather than let anything come near him, including the feds. Milo read it, and then he had to call the general authorities of his church. Even Sam didn't look so good, and I didn't even know that that man's brain was wired to understand fear. I mean, I've never seen those three scared of anything before, ever.
I've only seen them scared once, Julie stated.
I thought of her story, with the giant pupil looking through the rift into our universe.
Literally the end of the world, Grant told us as he adjusted the lapels of his expensive suit.
I mean, seriously? I'm a little nervous about the whole thing myself.
Holly cleared her throat.
This might sound bad, and I'm sorry to be the one to bring it up, but if it's that serious, why don't we just kill Ray right now?
Holly, Tripp sputtered,
that would be murder.
Hey, I'm trying to be practical here, Holly retorted. Whole world dies, or one nutcase buys it.
No offense, Julie.
None taken, she said. Then I'm siding with the whole world. It's a pretty sucky place, but I like it not destroyed. Let's just plug Ray and bury him in the backyard, Holly said.
I reminded myself to stay on her good side. Tripp looked disgusted. Grant seemed impressed by her logic. I was morally ambivalent, but it was too damn hot to have to dig a deep enough hole to hide a body.
I've thought of that myself, Julie told us. But there's one problem. Dad is probably not the only way for them to find their place of power. I mean, Dad found a way, so that information is out there somewhere. And on the other hand, he is our only way to find out where the Cursed One is going to be.
So we can be waiting for the son of a bitch, I finished for her. My hand instinctively moved to the grip of my shotgun. We need to make Ray talk.
Stick Holly in with him for 10 minutes,
Tripp said in disgust.
Can I borrow your car battery and some jumper cables?
Holly batted her eyelashes innocently.
I've got $50, says he talks.
Damn, woman, you have serious issues, Tripp said.
Anything else, Grant?
Julie asked. Just one thing. The blood sacrifice to turn on this evil artifact? Berika said that it had to come from a hero, a protector, a mystic champion. Apparently none of us had a clue what that meant. I shrugged. Personally, I had had about enough with the mystic garbage.
The blood has to come from the heart of a monster hunter.
Chapter 19 The paper plate of ham and cheese grits was slightly heavy and oily in my hands. Needlessly polite, I knocked on the door.
Ray, I brought you some dinner.
He snarled at me from his bed and jerked on the handcuff, but the heavy railing snapped his arm back. He was not having a good moment. His hair was wild, his skin was pale, and his eyes were unfocused. He looked as if he was listening to something far away.
Ray, are you with me, buddy?
Hello? Anybody home?
I set the plate of grits next to him. Once again, all I gave him was a plastic utensil, and if he could take me out with a spoon, he deserved to escape. Gradually his face returned to normal. His eyes focused on the food, and then he looked up at me.
Sorry, I was having an episode. He sounded slightly confused.
Not a problem.
I had no idea what medications he had been on at the asylum, but we had nothing to help him with here.
I brought you dinner.
Thanks.
He took the plate and dived into the food with gusto.
"Have you given any thought to telling us some more information, Ray?" I asked politely.
"Have you given any more thought to letting me go?"
"We're talking about it," I lied.
"If you gave us a little more to go on, a little something to show good faith effort, we would probably be more inclined to just turn you loose."
"I'll tell you everything I know as soon as I'm free. I'll call you from a payphone or something," he answered, as he swallowed his food without chewing. Bits of grits ran into his facial hair.
"Honest?"
"Sure, I believe that."
"No, really. Look, once I'm free, having the world destroyed doesn't exactly fit my plans. I can't hang out with the pretty señoritas if the clock for the universe isn't ticking. I'm talking about a win-win situation."
I tried a different tack. "We found Barika's journal. We know all about the cursed one. We're going to figure it out without you, Ray. We'll figure it out soon enough. You help us now, you get on our good side, and then we can try to help you out." He laughed at me.
"Do you think I'm stupid? Jeez, kid, I may be a little crazy, but I still have an IQ of 160. I've read that book, too. All you know now is how serious your problem is. That old Jew had a lot more questions than answers. Besides, he's stuck in your head anyway, so you should already know all of this stuff."
"Why is he stuck in my head? How can he communicate with me?" I pressed for any information that I could, hoping that he would slip.
"You can't be serious." "Really? Damn. My first impression was right. You are stupid. Earl must be hiring strictly by the bench press now. If you haven't figured out how that old man is trying to help you, then you really are up a creek. Even if I told you where to meet the cursed one, you wouldn't know what to do when you caught him."
"What do you mean?"
"No mystery here, kid. I'm not Hannibal Lecter. I'm not trying to play mind games with you. I'm just surprised is all." "You don't even know who you are, do you?"
"I know exactly who I am."
"If you did, then we wouldn't be having this conversation."
He laughed at me again.
"Oh, shit. The world is screwed. Good night, kid. Shut the lights on your way out. Talk to me when you have a clue."
I was heading to bed when I heard the raised voices. I hurried toward the noise, thinking that it might be some sort of emergency, but I slowed down when I realized it was Grant arguing with Julie in her room. She sounded rather calm, but he sounded upset. Probably should have kept walking, but showing a real lack of character, I decided to eavesdrop through the door.
"Could have at least tried.
Darnay and his whites were right there. I swear there was nothing I could have done except die along with him,"
Grant pleaded.
"I don't like him, but you know I would never abandon another hunter if there was a chance to save them. But there was no chance."
"Well, he made it, so apparently you were wrong."
I suddenly felt very smug. There was an awkward pause on the other side of the door.
"I know."
Grant sounded tired. It was the first time I had heard genuine emotion in his voice. "I've been dwelling on it every minute since it happened. I misjudged, and that mistake left a man to die. I left a fellow hunter to die alone."
Was he crying?
"Grant, it's okay. Everyone makes mistakes."
"I don't."
"Sorry. I've got to go. See you in the morning,"
Grant said. I moved away from the door as fast as I could remain silent, and made it about 10 feet before the door opened. I spun around, as if I had been coming from the other direction. Grant was in fact wiping his eyes as he closed Julie's door behind him.
"Evening, Grant."
"Pitt." He nodded, then walked quickly in the other direction, his pride not able to show weakness to a rival. especially a rival whom he had accidentally condemned to a horrible death. But I could tell by looking at him that it wasn't an act. He really was torn up by his failure. Torn up and hurting. I didn't feel so smug anymore. Grant stayed the night. I still didn't like the man one iota, but it was rather nice to have one more person to pull guard duty. While it was dark, it did not do us much good to have somebody on patrol outside, so instead, we all clustered in one suite of rooms centered around Ray Shackelford's little prison. One person was awake at all times to walk the hall. The sensors had been rigged to alert us if anything bigger than a rabbit came within 20 feet of the house. We could have moved that perimeter back, but the number of deer in the woods would have been setting off alarms all night long. Julie had taken extra precautions with Ray's room. She had put motion detectors all around his bed. If he even thought about making an escape, we would all know. Personally, I didn't think we had anything to really worry about. Nobody outside of Julie's immediate circle of friends and family knew about the home. The Heart of Dixie Historical Preservation Society was an effective front, so even if the feds did have somebody leaking information to Lord Machado, they didn't know about this place. I turned in for the evening. I put my armor on the ground next to the bed, weapons sitting on top. If I needed to find them quickly in the dark, it would not be a problem. I even left my pants on in case I needed to move in a hurry. My watch wasn't until 2 a.m. I heard Holly's boots echo in the hall. All of us were close enough that if anything bad happened, we would all know. The only people who slept far apart in a situation like this were the suckers in the horror movies. Before I drifted off to sleep, I comforted myself that at least Grant was sleeping in a different room than Julie. I had no idea if that meant they weren't as close as I feared, or if their relationship was currently on the rocks, like I hoped, or, worst-case scenario, Julie was just trying to be polite to the rest of us. I did not really know why or how I had fallen so hard for Julie Shackelford, but I had. She was by far the most interesting, smart, and attractive woman I had ever known. I cringed when I remembered seeing her kissing Grant through the rifle scope. Now that was an unpleasant thought to fall asleep on.
"Hello again, boy,"
called the old man. He was still sitting on the stone steps of the crumbled and partially burned church.
"Watch this as it goes now."
He spun his little carved toy on the steps. This time it stayed upright for nearly 2 whole seconds before it fell over.
"See? It's much better this time,"
he said with obvious pride. "Bravo," I said, as I walked through the snow toward him. Once again I was barefoot, but the cold was not uncomfortable beneath my soles. And I always thought ghosts floated around in white sheets and rattled chains.
"Ha! Boy thinks he is funny man now."
"You are, or were, Mordecai Berika, born in Lodz, Poland. Monster hunter." He did not betray any noticeable reaction when I said that.
"His good name. I not hear whole name in long time."
"I guess. If you were alive, you would be almost 130.
"Is all? Time pass so slow when he's stuck."
"So you're not alive, but you're stuck. Just what are you?"
"I say before, it's no important. I just friend."
The old man scooped up his little makeshift dreidel and placed it in my hand.
"Here, you take. Give to your children someday. Maybe they play with and say, 'Oh, he's fun.'"
I held the little toy in my palm. It really did look awful, but I did not have the heart to tell him since he seemed so proud. In his defense, he had been dead for 60 years.
I imagine that would make a man's carving skills a little rusty.
Thanks. I tucked it into my pocket.
Welcome. Now, for me, you not worry. You stop cursed one, you help me just fine. Maybe I get not stuck.
He shrugged his narrow shoulders.
Who knows?
That was your mission in life, stopping the cursed one.
It's hard to remember.
He tapped one bony finger against his cranium.
Few things I know. Some I only think I know. But I know for sure one thing that is true. Time is short.
Ray Shackelford says 3 days. I suppose 2 now.
Yes, sounds right. You must learn much, very fast. It's up to you. No one else, boy.
I know, I answered. At this point, arguing about my purpose in life seemed rather silly, especially against the ghost in my head. If you don't mind me asking, how did you die? Last anybody heard, the Nazis had taken you. He hawked and spat a wad of phlegm into the snow.
Bastards. Some monsters are just men. Sometimes, worst kind of all is men. How I die? It's hard to say. It's not important now.
Did it hurt? It seemed a stupid question.
A stupid question. Of course hurt. Hurt when you died, yes?
Yeah, I guess. Even in my dream state, the scar tissue that coated so much of my body was still thick and coarse. I thought that I had understood what pain was, until that day in my office showed me that I still had a lot to learn.
You no guess. You know. Hurts to get cut open. Fine. I tell story. But it's hard to remember. Nazis thought they could use Cursed One. Helped him. Tried to do then what he trying to do again now. Cursed One was weaker then. His body was not solid yet. He was like you. Want to hurry. Not want to learn. He could not get artifact himself. Made deal with Nazi bastards. They stole artifact, hurt the guardian, thought they kill, but not realize he not can die. Took to place of power. Here. This place. In my time.
He gestured around the church. What happened?
Cursed One was fool. Time was wrong. Artifact not work. Tattooed man came, fought here in snow, destroyed them, took back artifact.
That explained the strange dream that I had had in the hospital while I was waiting for Meyer's phone call.
He hid the artifact again. This time vampires help Cursed One. They steal artifact, bury guardian under mountain, but even that not kill him.
I shook my head. I had dreamed that. No, I mean you. What happened to you? He shrugged.
I not important, boy. Important thing is beat them now.
We will, I promised.
Only before they wrong. They fail and they die. Guardian kill them. Now Cursed One is smarter and stronger. He not mess up again this time. Enough. I must show you more of his memories.
I hate seeing through his eyes. It's like I'm not myself. It's like I'm actually in his head. I don't like it at all.
Is, how you say, necessary. I understand, boy. A shitty feeling to be stuck in some other body's head. Now shush. You must learn.
At this point, I knew the drill. I bowed down so he could place his hands on my head.
If any consolation, inside your head is much nicer than his.
Thanks. Lord Machado's Memories. A giant pyramid
deep in the jungle, the midnight moon fat and heavy over us. The climb to the top of the huge, ancient thing, covered in strange, faded carvings, leaving us sweat-soaked and exhausted beneath our armor. Far removed from the conquered city, nearly 2 weeks deep into the trackless wilderness, and this lone edifice was the only thing to be seen. This was the place of power. The sacrifice was prepared. Tonight was the night. Tonight the ceremony would be The vision suddenly ended. I was sitting on the steps of the church. The old man jerked his hands back in surprise. His eyes widened behind his glasses. What happened? Why did the memory stop? I felt as if I had been on the verge of learning something. I did not know what, but something important about stopping the cursed one.
Boy, you must go. Great danger comes.
He grabbed his cane, holding it in his frail hands like it was a weapon. The reaction seemed purely instinctual.
What?
I jumped to my feet, but the imaginary world of the battle-damaged village was still as unnaturally quiet as ever.
What comes? Go!
He shouted. I woke with a start and flung the sheets aside. It was dark inside the little guest room, but I knew right where I had left my weapons. I reached down and grabbed Abomination, my finger flipped the selector down to semi-auto, and I waited. The room was quiet except for my breathing and the pounding of blood in my head. I listened. The house itself was eerily silent.
Owen?
I pointed the shotgun at the voice, but froze before my finger moved to the trigger. Julie's form was silhouetted in the faint light coming from the window. I gasped and moved the muzzle aside.
Julie? I almost shot you.
I was surprised. I had not sensed her until she had spoken. She glided across the room toward me. In the dark, I could barely make out that she was wearing nothing but a small nightgown that stirred slightly in the breeze.
"What are you doing here?"
I asked. It was a stupid question.
"Shh."
She climbed onto the bed. She brushed the shotgun aside as she crawled over my legs, hiking up the flimsy nightgown as she went. Julie's lips sought mine, found them. She pushed me down, kissing me, running her face down my neck. Her hands pulled at my shirt, caressing the lines of scar tissue across my chest. I responded. Clumsily, I rubbed my hands over her body, feeling the silky gown slide about over her skin. I forgot about my dream. I forgot about the warning. Ever since I had met her, I had wanted to be with her, but I had doubted that it would ever happen. I doubted, but apparently I had been wrong. I was in love with Julie Shackelford, and she had come to me in the night. I did not care about anything other than that. The breeze stung the sweat on my arms.
Breeze?
Why was my window open? I froze. She did not stop moving against me. She licked my neck, hungrily, excitedly. My throat was damp. I could not feel her breath. She was not breathing. Realization hit me like a ton of bricks.
No!
I shouted as I twisted away. Seemingly surprised at the interruption, she fought me, pushing herself down against my throat. I took my hands from her body and grabbed her by the hair. I tried to pull her head away from my neck. She was stronger than I was, impossibly strong. Using my weight and a whole lot of desperation, I rolled off of the bed and took her with me. We crashed to the floor. Razor-white teeth flashed in the moonlight.
She was still trying to bite me. I struggled, shouting for help, and she swatted me in the face. My cranium bounced off of the floorboards. In the last minute, I had been asleep, surprised, confused, then horny, followed by terrified, but now I was just pissed off. I hit her again and again. She jumped off of me with unnatural speed, landing on her feet. I kicked at her, but she caught my bare ankle, picked me up as if I was a child, and swung me violently into the wall. I impacted sideways, broke several boards, and fell painfully to the floor. She grabbed me by the back of my neck and jerked me to my feet. I grasped her much smaller hands and tried to pry them away. It was a futile effort. I might as well have been bending steel bars. The voice was definitely not Julie's.
"Quit fighting! You belong to me now!"
The lights came on. She twisted me around so that I faced the door. The real Julie Shackelford stood in the doorway, pistol in hand. I looked directly down the .45-caliber hole in the barrel as I heard the safety snick off. This Julie was dressed, armed, and she looked really mad.
"Stinking vamps. You heard him. No means no."
She braced herself against the door jamb, looking for a clear shot. The clamp-like grip around my neck moved me into position as a human shield. I felt another hand grab onto my shoulder as the vampire peered around me. The pain was incredible, and the threat was unspoken. If Julie shot, then the undead would snap my neck. The grip on my neck intensified, cutting off some of the blood flow to my brain. The vampire spoke. The voice sounded almost like Julie with a more pronounced accent, but somehow dusty with age, as if not used to speaking often.
"Hi, honey. I'm home."
Julie's jaw dropped open in surprise. She blinked several times and shook her head. It looked like she was about to pass out from shock. The muzzle of her 1911 dipped slightly as her shooting stance fell apart.
"Mom?"
"Not good," I thought to myself.
"Julie, you're all grown up. Look at you." "Mom?"
Julie refocused. The gun moved back into position.
But you're dead."
The vampire moved me slightly as she conversed with her daughter.
"I'm not dead, honey. I'm right here. Everything is going to be just fine."
Holly appeared in the doorway. She raised her rifle and pointed it at my head as well. Now that made me real nervous. Though she was training hard and getting better, she was still a pretty lousy shot. If I had to choose between the emotionally stunned sharpshooter or the newbie, I knew which one I wanted to take the shot. I managed to grunt out one request.
"How let Julie shoot?"
The vampire shook me like a rag doll.
"Shut it, bloodbag,"
the creature hissed.
"I'm having a conversation here." "Let him go, bitch," Holly commanded.
She tucked her face down tight against the stock and peered through the sights.
"Or I'll blow your brains out."
"You can't be here. You haven't been invited,"
Julie said. She sounded rather confused.
"This is my home," she replied. "I don't need an invitation."
"Mom, please. This can't be happening. You disappeared. We thought you were dead."
"Come on, honey. You had to have suspected this. You knew what I was working on when I left. You never found my body."
I could hear the gentle smile creep into the creature's voice trying once again to be the loving parent.
"I'm just here for your daddy,"
the vampire said soothingly.
"Julie, you have one fucked-up family," Holly stated.
I agreed. I heard rapid speaking in the hallway, a desperate call for help. Tripp stepped quickly into the room behind Holly. He still had his cell phone in one hand. He moved off to the side as he raised his subgun. Now I had three weapons pointed at my head, and the triangulation of fire was giving the vampire less room to hide. She backed up, dragging my heavy bulk along easily. We were backed into a corner.
"Mom, how could you become one of them?" Julie asked plaintively.
"I didn't have much choice, dear. But once you get used to it, it is wonderful. I can do things that you can't even imagine. I can feel things that would stop your heart if you experienced them. I have eternal youth and beauty. Come with me. We can take your daddy. The change will be good for him. It will fix his mind. We can be a family again."
"Never," Julie said with determination. Her brown eyes narrowed as she concentrated on her front sight.
"Suit yourself, dear. But it beats being a rotting piece of meat, like your boyfriend here is going to be, if you don't back the hell off of me."
She picked me up off of the ground. I cringed as my vertebrae popped. All pretenses of motherly love vanished.
"I didn't want to kill you, honey, but if you push me, then I don't have a choice. I'm taking your daddy back, no matter what."
"You got three guns on you. Kind of stupid to be making demands," Holly said.
The vampire hissed at her.
"I hate vampires, sister. Give me a reason."
"I'm a master now. I'm a queen in my world. You can't even begin to understand what I can do. This is your last chance."
"You're too young to be a master,"
Julie stated calmly. She stayed framed in the doorway. The other two slowly began to spread out even further. Holly looked angry. Tripp looked scared but determined. Fingers moved onto triggers. Somebody was going to shoot at any second. I could feel it. I tried to make myself as small a target as possible. That is very difficult if you happen to look like me.
"Too young? Am I now? Poor kid, just like your dad. Nose always in a book, thinking that you understand what's really going on. I was a hunter once myself. I know what you know. And let me tell you, you're wrong. It isn't about time, honey. It's about the blood. The power is in the blood that makes you, and in the blood that you take. I was made by the strongest of them all, and I've taken so much blood and so many lives that you can't even begin to understand. I have swam in rivers of it. I've torn the life out of 10,000 beating hearts, and you will be next. Now give me your father!"
She shouted so loudly that dust shook from the ceiling, and all of the humans in the room flinched. Gretchen appeared in the hallway, short and cloaked in her burka, armed only with what looked like a stick. She pointed at me and said a single word in a rumble almost as deep as her husband's.
"Pocket."
I reached down, cringing against the pressure on my neck, trying hard to focus and maintain consciousness. My hand touched my pants pocket. There was something inside. I reached in. My fingers felt the lumpy texture of poorly whittled wood. The old man's handmade toy. It could not be there. But it was. Without thinking, I pulled the impossible little carving out and stuck it firmly against the hard fingers pressing into my neck. The toy disintegrated in a flash. The undead thing that used to be Susan Shackelford screamed when it touched her, an unbearable howl of burning agony. I was dropped to the ground as her hand burst into blue flames. I hit the floor and rolled away as the other three hunters reacted and started pulling triggers. It was the first time I had seen more than a darkened silhouette of my midnight visitor. She really did look like Julie, but possibly even more hauntingly beautiful, ethereal, even stunning. Pale skin, dark hair, eyes that you could drown in. But then the resemblance stopped. For vampires were unnatural creatures, and right now this one was distracted by a burning hand, long fangs revealed in a frozen scream. A split-second snapshot of confusion and pain, and then the bullets hit. Impact after impact tore into the creature, spraying black fluids across the room. Holes appeared in the wall behind as bullets passed through tissues and shattered bones. I scrambled for my shotgun as the uninhibited blasts assaulted and damaged my hearing. I grabbed Abomination, swung it around, and, still sitting on the floor, fired a 9-round magazine of buckshot into the creature. 108 silver pellets struck her body in less than a second and a half, and at that limited range, most of them were still impacting as a solid, penetrating mass. The room was filled with drifting smoke from burning flesh and gunpowder. Brass tinkled, steel and plastic thumped on the floor as the four of us simultaneously dropped our spent magazines. I fumbled toward my armor and ammo pouches. Susan Shackelford was pressed solidly into the riddled corner, torn asunder, leaking black fluids, and broken by the carnage that we had unleashed. The flame on her hand gradually died down as she studied it through her shattered visage, seemingly in fascination. The creature stood upright. Her flesh had been pulverized and stripped from her bones. She laughed at us, a long, hard laugh, as if we had provided some serious entertainment.
"Hunters are even more pathetic than I remember. I'm a master now. Don't you understand what that means?"
Almost instantly her flesh was whole and white. I blinked, trying to understand how exactly that worked according to the laws of physics. She smiled widely, fangs gleaming.
"You can't kill me."
"But we can try," Julie answered as she dropped the slide on a fresh magazine.
She snapped the pistol up and shot her mother right between the eyes. The creature's smiling face rocked back briefly. I locked in a fresh magazine of buckshot, but before I could fire, the vampire moved in a blur of speed, crossing the room in a split second, almost too fast to track. Holly was knocked easily aside. Julie's hands were jerked over her head as the vampire grabbed her.
"I offered you immortality, honey. That was not a choice. I'm going to give it to you whether you want it or not," the vampire said in her sweet Southern Belle voice.
I snapped my shotgun up, but stopped, fearful of striking Julie. Tripp's UMP was reloaded, and he had a clean angle. He lifted the gun to fire, but it was torn out of his surprised hands. The vampire had moved so quickly that I had not even seen it strike.
"You can either come back as a dim-witted slave, or you can partake of my blood and taste of my power."
Julie struggled to release herself.
"Never!"
she shouted. A small black flash charged in from the hallway. Gretchen screamed some sort of battle cry. She shook a narrow stick above her head, complete with feathers, leather braids, and what looked like a shrunken head.
The vampire hissed, let go of Julie, and retreated back into the room. Gretchen pursued, still shaking her totem and shouting in her strange, gravel-voiced language. The vampire fell back, cringing and recoiling, until it struck the wall.
"Holy symbol!"
Holly shouted as she aimed her vepr and pulled the trigger. The roar of the 308 was tremendous in the enclosed space. If I lived through this, I was probably going to be deaf. The bullet tore into the vampire's side. The rest of us followed suit, firing over and around Gretchen, who continued to wave the stick and hold the vampire back. I emptied my second magazine in a heartbeat and grabbed another one. My hands were a blur as I reloaded. Our lives depended on putting some hurt into the evil thing, and I moved faster than I ever had before. Abomination barked again and again as I put solid silver slugs into the monster. Susan Shackelford disappeared. More holes were torn into the already damaged wall before we realized and stopped shooting. One moment she had been there, the next she was gone. The shredded nightgown fell to the floor and lay in a puddle of black ooze. The thick gray mist spiraled slowly out of the open window.
"Did she just turn into fog?" Tripp asked.
"I didn't know they could really do that," Holly said.
"We didn't think they could," Julie answered.
"Hey, that was my nighty."
"What?"
I shouted. I was the only poor fool who had not been wearing their electronic earplugs.
"Reload. She's going to go for my dad."
That I understood. I did not have time to put on my whole suit of armor, so I threw the chest webbing on and buckled the pistol belt over that. At least I was going to have lots of ammo and a big honking knife. Gretchen pulled a leather pouch from under her burka, dipped her gloved finger in, and pulled out a blob of purple goo. She stuck it into my ears. It was cold and disgusting. After seeing what she had done with the road rash, however, I wasn't going to protest.
I called Earl. "Help is on the way."
Tripp kicked his broken UMP.
"We're going to need bigger guns." "My room's on the way. Let's go."
Julie led the way into the hall, gun outstretched.
"Where's Grant?"
she shouted back over her shoulder.
"Haven't seen him,"
Holly answered.
"His turn to be on guard. She probably killed him already, bitch. Damn it!"
Julie raged.
"Come on."
I thought that I had seen her angry before, but I had been wrong.
"Tripp, grab some hardware out of my room. Hurry."
"What should I get?"
"Use your imagination. Now go!"
She sprinted down the hall. I was right behind her. I was barefoot. The hardwood was cold under my soles. I pushed past Julie as we approached the door to her father's room. There was no time for subtlety. I lowered one shoulder, and with a roar I smashed into the heavy portal. It flew open as the frame broke under the impact. Some thing was waiting for us, standing on the bed, over the still form of Ray Shackelford. Julie's mother had changed into something horrible, something out of a bad nightmare. Her false cloak of humanity had been shed, and now we could look upon the true face of a master vampire. Her body had twisted and elongated, gray skin stretched tight over twitching muscles as she swiveled her long neck toward us. Her eyes were solid red, and her mouth opened to reveal incisors as long as fingers and sharper than knives. Her beautiful features had contorted back, ears lengthened and swept up. I could see how the vampire legends had come to include bats. She had Ray by the wrist. She tugged, and the handcuff chain snapped. She snarled at us as we entered.
"You don't learn, do you?"
Her voice had changed, becoming deeper and more animalistic. I raised my shotgun and fired.
The slag struck her in the chest and exploded out the other side. I fired again as she hopped off of the bed, dragging Ray with her. The vampire grabbed the heavy wrought iron frame and effortlessly hurled it toward us. Several hundred pounds of furniture turned into a missile. The bed struck, and I was hurled backwards into the hall. I crashed into Julie, and we both sprawled to the floor. I opened my eyes. Julie was lying inches away, profile crushed painfully against the floor.
"We have to shoot my dad,"
she cried as she tried to rise.
"Don't let her take him."
"Got it," Holly stated as she stepped over us. The bed was lying sideways, blocking the doorway. She raised her Vepr over the obstacle and fired wildly into the room, emptying the 20-round magazine in an instant. I surged to my feet and pushed the bed out of the way, Abomination held in one hand, ready to shoot as soon as I had a target. There was nothing but a hole in the floor. Boards had been pulverized into sawdust, and the creature had dropped through, taking Ray with her. "Ah, hell," I said. If Ray fell into the hands of the cursed one, the world was pretty much screwed. I could see no movement down the dark hole.
"Don't let her take him. Do whatever you have to do," Julie ordered.
She stepped to the edge of the ragged hole, knelt down, and without hesitation began to climb. Tactically, it was a stupid move to crawl blindly after a super-powerful undead, but we did not have any choice other than pursuit. She looked up at me before she dropped into the opening. I could not tell if her features were betraying fear or sadness. She disappeared into the dark hole.
"Clear!"
she shouted. I followed. My torso barely fit through the jagged opening. I leveraged myself down as best as possible, dangled from my fingertips, and then bent my knees and dropped the last 4 feet. I landed with a thud. Julie flipped the lights on. We were in the guest bedroom that had served as Gretchen's hospital. We were alone.
"Split up. Find them," she shouted up through the hole. "You three take the stairs."
"But if we split up, we're easy targets."
"Doesn't matter. We just need to stay alive long enough to kill Dad."
She sounded desperate.
"I'll head for the kitchen. You take the family room. Hurry!"
"All right." I wanted to tell her to be careful. I wanted to tell her to stay alive. I wanted to tell her to be reasonable and let me stay with her. But there was just no time. I fled the room, turning the lights on as I went. The mansion was huge, and the impossibly fast creature could be anywhere, or she could have already have fled. No. She was going to stay and finish her work tonight. She had said that she was going to take Julie and give her the gift of twisted immortality. Somehow I knew that Susan was still here in her ancestral home. She was here. I could feel it. And she had the one person who could help the cursed one. I had to kill Ray before he could talk. The doors to the family room crashed open when I kicked them with my bare foot. I swept in fast, shotgun at the ready. I activated the flashlight. I had no idea where the light switch was in the large room. Dozens of Shackelford faces stared down at me from their portraits. I stabbed the beam quickly into each corner, across furniture and construction in progress, and remembering my lessons from the Antoine Henri, I shined the light on the ceiling as well. Nothing. I ran for the next set of doors, the ballroom. I did not really know what I was going to do if I stumbled across the enemy. She had moved so quickly that I could scarcely believe my own eyes. Hopefully I would have time to blow Ray's brains out before Susan tore my head off. I really wished that I had Gretchen and her faith right about then. I knew that I did not have time to gain religion in the next few seconds, but it sure would have been nice. The doors opened. I stepped quickly into the ancient ballroom. I heard a noise, something wet and slurping. I shined the surefire light across the walls. The old-fashioned mirrors reflected the brilliant beam over and over, refracting seemingly without end from all the reflective surfaces. Even the chandelier was briefly lit. My reflection stared back at me from 20 mirrors,